What's up, CUSA fans? Welcome into another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm your host, Sarah Rudolph, and we are here to talk all about the final week of weekday CUSA action. So much exciting news to talk about. Lots of games this week. Cannot believe we are in our final week of weekday CUSA. Josh Jonas joining me again here on the pod, of course, to talk some football. But can you believe it's coming to a close?
I know. It's crazy. I started writing my preview and I was like, weekday CUSA concludes. I was like, oh, man, it's just flying by. But I'll tell you what, I was kind of looking back on it a little bit just to start reflecting on how great of a campaign this year's was. 7-1 possession games this year, 6 decided by 3 points or fewer,
ooh,
including our 2 overtime thrillers in week 9 that we'll dive into. But yeah. Edition 3 of Weekday CUSA did not disappoint. So you guys are welcome.
Yes, you're so welcome. And we close it all out this week on Halloween night. So who knows what could happen in that game. But before we get to that, we want to go and through our top plays for the week, show them to you guys, and just get a little commentary from me and Josh. Who knows what's about to happen? I don't know. I've only seen this video one time. So let's see what we got. All right, number 5 coming in. We've got Devin Gandy's kickoff return touchdown. This was, talk about wild.
Yeah, and what a moment here to come out of halftime. You know, you're down 20-7 in this game, and you really just need a spark. And what a way to get a spark. You know, breaking out the, you know, reaching to the bag of tricks for the lateral, you know, kickoff return here. And yeah, Gandy just takes it way up the sideline.
Yeah, the trickery was on full display just then for the Bulldogs. I mean, I couldn't tell you that this was going to happen at all.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure a lot of people, like, they see him kind of turn and load that arm up. And they're like, what is happening here? And then, yeah, you're like, oh, Devin Gandy's standing over there on the sideline. And, yeah, you get some interesting decisions there at the end.
Exactly. Yes, for sure. All right, coming in at number 4, we've got Coleman Bennett, 76-yard touchdown catch here. I mean, the tiptoe down the sideline. I think that ESPN College Football actually put this one out of on their social accounts because it was that good.
Yeah. I mean, and I made a comment kind of before we started recording that, I mean, the amount of times Kennesaw's had plays like this where it just seems like a routine screen pass. And it's been a couple times that has been on here for plays like this that, you know, he just gets to display that, you know, incredible speed, athleticism to, you know, get down the sideline and stay in bounds. So
yeah, the body control you have to have for that one. All right, number 3, Kyrie Duplessis is back in the top 5. Surprise, surprise. 25-yard toe tap catch.
Yeah, number 4 or 5 for him this season. He's become a regular, but yeah, I mean, and I think one of the most impressive parts of this play too is you have a player that is 2 yards offside on this play. Nick Minicucci still manages to get this ball out, and Kyrie, you know, down the field says, "I got you, don't worry." Yeah,
impressive to have him back. All right, coming in at number 2, Rodney Tisdall Jr., the hero of the night, 2-point conversion in OT to win it for WKU.
Yeah, and what a gutsy play by the freshman here. You know, rolling out here, you throw across your body in traffic. Managed to find Katie Hutchinson in the end zone. You know, that was just so textbook for a young quarterback, and we'll kind of get into it more, like to lean on a guy like Katie Hutchinson in this game. Obviously, he's the one he's looking to for the winner.
For sure. We'll talk about that game here in a second. But at number 1, Missouri State, one-handed interception. Oh, the beauty.
Yeah, and what that. It's kind of a wacky ending to the
game. Wacky, yes.
They still end up with the ball. They seal the win, but yeah, an incredible play here to get a paw on it and seal the game for Missouri State. Their 3rd road win of the season. They're playing together. Going on. Yeah, yeah.
I love it. All right. Well, before we get into everything else that we have going on today, let's recap these games that we just kind of got to see a couple of highlights from. Like you said, 2 overtime games this week. Some really fun and exciting stuff there. But we'll start it out with the first game of the night last Tuesday, which was Kennesaw State at FIU on Vice Night. Sadly, the Panthers drop another on Vice Night. They move to 0-4.
Yeah.
When Vice Night is in the building.
I don't know if it's at the point now where it's like, hey, this has been fun, but it, you know, it's a fun campaign. But man, yeah, to be 0-4 and not have the results come, it's like, dang. It's kind of some bad juju around it now. But
you look at it too and you're like, who knew that Kennesaw State was going to be this good this year? You know, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. Fans out there, you can get mad at me about this if you want. But when you're looking at your schedule, you're saying, okay, it's homecoming or it's Vice Night. Who do we think we can get a victory against potentially? Last year, Kennesaw State, 2 wins. This year, totally different Kennesaw State team. So really exciting stuff, though, out of them. Odom and Williams both saw action in this game for the Owls, and they kind of almost mirrored each other in a couple of ways. Both of them had about 30 rush yards. Both of them had a rushing touchdown. Obviously, Odom's played the majority of the game. So as far as yardage and stuff goes, he got the edge there. But this whole two quarterback thing that they've been doing has been interesting.
It's interesting, and I'm curious. You know, Trey on our staff, he's not a huge fan of it. I'm reserving judgment because I think, you know, I like the way that Jerry is handling it so far. With, you know, he's allowing Amari Odom. Obviously, he said, "Hey, we're going to give you a little extra time to rest. We'll let Dexter take care of business against Louisiana Tech. You're QB1 once we get back from the bye week." You know, he puts him in, he gets the game kind of out of hand more or less, and then he's like, "You know what, all right, let's just keep the other guy, you know, fresh." You bring in Dexter Williams, he completes 2 passes for 79 yards and a touchdown. I mean, his explosive, you know, they both have such you know, identical skill sets. And I think Amari Odom has just a slight a slight advantage in both games. But I mean, what Dexter Williams is able to do, it's hard not to put him on the field, right? So I will commend Jerry Mack that he's like, "Hey, I'm going to continue to reward you because you're playing so well that I'm going to get you on the field. I'm going to let you make plays. But, you know, Mari's our guy right now." So, again, we'll see how sustainable it is. But, hey, it worked for him another week. So it's kind of hard to, you know, to put any speculation on it right now. But really, this was such a team effort for the Owls. Four different players scored a rushing touchdown. You know, the defense continues to step up. You know, they were obviously, it was kind of very bend, don't break. They gave up a lot of yards to FIU, but it was that, you know, they struggled to execute when they got down into Kennesaw territory, into the red zone. You know, you kind of look at a few of the drives where, you know, they had turnover on downs at the Kennesaw 27, a missed field goal from the Kennesaw 6, two other long drives that ended in field goals that just kind of felt a little empty. So, you know, again, they got it done where it mattered. But yeah, I mean, this Kennesaw team, they look special.
Yes,
one win from bowl eligibility.
To talk about it, but they are one win away from bowl eligibility in their first year that they could be bowl eligible anyway. So that's really exciting stuff. But on the positives on the FIU side, Keyshawn Owens had another lights out game. I mean, he won Jenkins. But he did. He looked good too. But you know, you have to have all the pieces together in the right places in order to get everything done. And you can't just put the game on two guys backs and expect a positive result. So but yeah, it was good to see those things out of those guys. Obviously, as we move throughout the rest of the season, we'll see how they fare. They've got a game against Missouri State this week. We'll get to that in a little bit. But again, Kennesaw, 45-26, 45 points on the board. Can't deny that they are doing good things down there in Kennesaw, Georgia.
Absolutely.
So the nightcap, what ended up being a nightcap, I think, of the night, because it went into overtime. WKU goes into Ruston, gets the win in OT with backup true freshman quarterback Rodney Tisdale Jr., but he had quite a night.
Yeah, and it's been awesome. You know, I feel like we've had such quarterback drama for multiple teams this year, and not a whole lot of drama here. I think it was kind of a similar situation to Amari Odom a couple weeks ago, where it was like, you know, Tyson, he has a shoulder injury that he's still kind of nursing, and he's like, he's not 100%. He's here if we absolutely need him. If Rodney went down or whatever, like, he could come in. But you know, he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna put it on the, you know, the young guy." And yeah, he answered the call. 21-34 for 227 and a touchdown. He had 12 carries for a game high 73 yards. And I love that, you know, the confidence right out the gates, right? Because he led them to scores on their first four drives. And I think partially, you know, Louisiana Tech probably wasn't doing a whole lot of prep on him throughout the week. So, you know, you see this a lot in baseball where a guy gets called up and like those first 2 weeks, he's on a heater because no one's seen him, right? And there's no scouting on him. So I think you saw a little bit of that they weren't totally prepared for Tisdale. But and then we kind of saw how, you know, they answered in the second half. You get a jump start like that with a kickoff return. But you know, really this one was just Louisiana Tech. It was just too much shooting themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of mistakes for them. Turnover on downs of WKU 44, a missed field goal, another turnover on downs from the WKU 13, an interception in WKU territory. That was on four straight drives.
Yeah.
So that's a really tough thing to come back from. And then you get an unnecessary block in the back on a punt return that went for a touchdown that got called back. Blocked field goal at the end of regulation. Like you said, just a lot of mistakes that just they couldn't overcome. And then they go into overtime. WKU, great two-point conversion play, which we showed a little bit earlier, but it really was a heroic performance there from Rodney Tisdale Jr. And I love how the team just, you know, rallied around him. That's their QB for that week, and they got the job done. So WKU moves to 4-1 in conference play. Definitely still in the mix. Also, that was their bowl eligible clinching win, right?
Yep.
WKU's the bowl eligible now.
Seventh straight season under Tyson Helton that they are bowl eligible. So, they continue to run. But yeah, I mean, just I think what impressed me most too about Rodney's performance is in overtime. Like, obviously, you look to those big gutsy moments, and we talked about it with the 2-point conversion. But even leading up to that 4th and 10 play,
yeah,
you know, you get an 11-yard pass there, 3rd and 7, you get another pass to Katie Hutchinson, who led the team in receiving. He's become, you know, quite the weapon for them. You know, in those moments, like, yeah, you're looking for, you know, your best target. You know, who's going to get get their hands on a ball, make a big play. So for him to make a lot of those plays in really tense moments, I was like, they got a good one. They got a good one
it's
for sure.
It's crazy to me when true freshmen come out and show out like this and get like, really dig in these high pressure moments,
because yeah,
he was playing football on a Friday night 12 months ago. Like, that is crazy to me. So awesome job there by the Hilltoppers. We'll have to see what they do the rest of the season. A lot of these teams at the top control their own destiny. We'll just have to see what happens. So we move to Wednesday night, Middle Tennessee at Delaware. We'll start with that game. Did not go to overtime, but it got close there for a second.
I was going to say, we hyped up our Tuesday night slate, and those ones were good, but our Wednesday night games, you know, were still just as good. We had a 3-point game, and then an overtime game that was decided by a touchdown. But this one, you know, was such an interesting game. I thought that Delaware was going to run away with this one. They had a huge second quarter. They outscored Middle Tennessee 17-0, outgained them 130-40. You know, it was just another great game for Nick Minicucci. 276 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
Got a zero on that INT line. You're doing good things.
Certified baller right now. What he is doing is really incredible. And again, I mean, you can't, obviously, at this point in the year, like, he's had enough experience that, you know, we can't really call him the backup quarterback anymore.
Right.
But still, just looking back on how this year started, it was all supposed to be Zach Marker. So for him to continue to just stack performance after performance against great teams. He looked great out in Colorado. He just had a 422-yard game. What he's doing right now, really great. Even by halftime, he was 21 of 30, 214 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah. So he was getting it done, but Middle Tennessee made it interesting.
They did.
By the end of the game.
Certainly did. But I mean, that you just couldn't keep away. Delaware outscored Middle Tennessee 70-0 in that third quarter, and I think that just really kind of took things. I think that was the big quarter, obviously, for Delaware. Middle Tennessee falls in this one to 0-3 in conference play. It's not over yet for them for the season. They still have a lot of time left to work on some things and get some positive things in their corner. But I know a 3-point loss for that team is tough. Let's see. Do they play this week? Yeah, they do. So they'll have Jack State at home, which is not an easy one either. We'll talk about that
right here.
We'll talk about that here in just a minute. Okay, final game of the night, the true nightcap of the week. As you know, Josh was up watching that game. Missouri State at New Mexico State. That didn't kick until, 8 p.m. Central Time?
Yep, and that one went to overtime.
And then that one went into overtime. So I think the biggest thing, unfortunately, on a negative side that I got out of that game, Logan Fife, 4 interceptions. Tough night for him.
Very unlike him. I think we talked about how just very consistent he had been all year. You know, maybe not the most efficient, but you know, even you look at his game log, he had 4 interceptions going into this game and then threw 4 interceptions just in this game. So, yeah, very, very uncharacteristic of him. But I mean, Missouri State was making, you know, as we showed, there was another one that I think made it onto SportsCenter top 10, that they had another kind of toe tap interception. Like, they were making plays to get these interceptions. These weren't necessarily the worst throws.
For sure.
You know, and that's just kind of part of the, you know, when we were previewing this game, we talked about how, you know, the big play threat that New Mexico State's off, you know, they're taking a lot of shots down the field. That's part of it, right? Is we're going to have one of these games where a lot of those passes just aren't landing in the right places. And, but yeah, tough one for Logan Fife. A pretty good game overall for Jacob Clark. I mean, he did get our offensive player of the week, but it was a very weird game, just kind of the way it flowed for him. You know, he trots out for that first drive. We're like, all right, yes, like he's back, like excited to see him. He leads this great 75-yard drive that just looked, you know, just seamless. It was just to script, like as they drew it up. And then he throws back-to-back interceptions.
Yep.
And then they had, I think they had a couple three and outs right after that. So it was like for them to go, you know, start so hot, stall out. You know, he leads a couple big scoring drives to begin the second half. They kind of stall out again. They let New Mexico State back in the game. So it was just so the flows in this game for him were a little challenging, but ultimately he helps him get it done in overtime.
For sure. I know, but it's tough to see that come out such a high and then go down to such a low in that first couple of drives. But, you know, it's first game back jitters. That's what I'm going to chalk it up to.
And on the road.
And on the road. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And then we've talked about this before. Like, that was a color on color matchup too. And Missouri State was wearing their black uniforms, which New Mexico State also has. There's a video, I'm sure y'all can find it, of a Logan Fife interception out there. And I'm like, I just think he forgot he was wearing a real white uniform and not a black one. And so you never know how that could have flayed out for things. But
yeah,
fun matchup there in Las Cruces. Obviously, overtime game. Fun way to start to end out our weekday CUSA slate, but it is not over yet.
No.
And we will talk about that here on the other side of a great interview that we have. Our very own Jessica Radford sits down with Abby Lee, Middle Tennessee women's golfer who was just named a finalist for the NCAA Top 30 Woman of the Year Award. You'll see that in just a second.
Hello, Conference USA fans. Today, we're joined by Middle Tennessee's woman golfer, Abby Lee, as she was named a top 30 honoree for the NCAA Woman of the Year Award. Abby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, I just want to first say congratulations on being named the top 30 honoree.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a huge honor. I'm incredibly humbled.
What does this honor truly represent to you on a personal level?
Really just, I'm incredibly grateful for MTSU and the opportunity they've given me to live out my dream of being a women's golfer in Division I athletics. So they've been incredibly supportive of me academically, athletically, and every big crazy idea I've ever had, they've helped me along the way. So yeah, it really is just really heartwarming for me to have a place that's built me up over the last 4 going on 5 years. And I'm just really grateful for the experience and the honor.
Now, girl, I don't know how you did this, but you graduated summa cum laude in mechatronics engineering with a minor in mathematics, I heard, with a perfect 4.0 GPA. I mean, now you're pursuing your MBA. Kudos to you. I love that.
Thank you.
For learning at such an elite level.
So my mom is actually a high school teacher at my local high school. I was lucky to have her twice. She teaches AP statistics and honors geometry. So academics has always been extremely important in my household. And my parents grew me up with raised me with the mindset of you can do anything you set your mind to. So after my first semester of college, I came out with a 4.0 and had a lot of support from our Student Athlete Enhancement Center. And they were super great with me. And I set this goal to continue it out for as long as possible. And I was lucky that it was through all 4 years. So it was just a goal that I set and something that I worked extremely hard for. So I am very excited that it pulled through.
Mechatronics engineering is no small feat. How did you balance such a demanding academic program along with being a Division I athlete?
I just had a really tight schedule. I would write down everything I needed to do that week. Just always was super aware of all the assignments that I had to stay on top of. So I would really do things up to like 3 weeks in advance, like figuring out how to make sure that when I was at golf tournaments, I was all about the golf tournament and not worrying so much about school. And then the time that I had at home, just really maximizing that. So yeah, I just really focused on my time management. So yeah.
Were there moments in the classroom or in the lab that shaped you just as much as your time on the golf course?
Yes, definitely. I was lucky that I had incredible professors at MTSU. They're all industry experts. So really, they also just kind of really supported me and my dreams for athletics. I was very fortunate that they all wanted me to perform as well in the classroom as I did in the on the field or in the course. So yeah, I would say definitely I learned a lot about teamwork as well in the lab, because a lot of ours were group projects, and I got to take some of the things that I learned from athletics and use those in the classroom and vice versa. So yeah, my environments were pretty similar actually, on the course and in the classroom.
You had a breakout season your senior year, one of the best in program history, actually. What clicked for you, and was there a turning point in your mindset or preparation?
So I had an injury my junior year, and I was removed from the sport for about 4 months. So I wasn't able to play at all. And really, that was just a huge perspective shift for me. I feel like when you're an athlete and you're in the moment, sometimes the stress can get to you and it can become your identity. And I really was just putting a lot of pressure on myself. And then when I was removed from it and had the opportunity to come back, my main focus was just making the most out of it. So I let it happen a lot more. And we had a coaching change as well, and she really embraced me and embraced the team. So helped me just kind of come back out after the injury. And I was fortunate to have a great season. I had incredible teammates around me that were incredibly supportive, and two new coaches that helped me along the way. So just a huge blessing. It wasn't necessarily that I was expecting it. It's something you always work for, always hope for, but it's never guaranteed. So I'm very grateful that I had that success last year.
You touched on it a little bit, how golf is as mental as it is physical. How did your academic disciplines influence the way you approach the game strategically?
I'd say this is pretty similar amongst most Division I teams, but we spend a lot of time really analyzing the course, analyzing our game. We use stats programs. We use very complicated greens books at every tournament. So a lot of it is mostly mental. So that's something that we focus on as a team and individually. So really just honing in on that. But golf in general, when you get to this level, it really is just the tiniest things that comes down to even just a degree of your club face. So it's something we have to be extremely precise with. So it's something that we all focus on.
What moment on the course are you most proud of during your Blue Raiders career?
During my Blue Raiders career? Wow. That's such a fun question. I would say at conference. At conference, I didn't have my best game, but I was able to come to pull through. And I think I shot even for the tournament, I believe, to make the all tournament team. So really just making the most out of what I had that tournament. And just golf is one of those sports you're never going to have it all at one time. It's just playing your game and doing what you can do. So I would say the conference tournament this year, just really figuring out a way to pull it together when I didn't feel like I had my best stuff.
You are the president of the SAC committee at Middle Tennessee. You've also are a part of our conference SAC committee here at Conference USA. And you just led initiatives that impacted both campus and the local community. What have you learned about leadership through service?
Leadership through service, you really just learn that you are a small part of a big community around you. We all work together to make our surrounding area a better place. So we're very fortunate that we get the opportunity to play in athletics and get an education, but also we get to meet new people and help them along the way, because a lot of us are in a fortunate position where we're able to do that, especially with the support of our athletic program. So MTSU has always, any idea I've ever had for community service or our student athletes, they have given us the connections and given us the resources to be able to give back, because I think that's incredibly important and allows you to stay grounded and give back to the people around you, because it really takes a village.
For community service, you really like to support healthcare workers. And I think that just falls back on your injury that you had your junior season. And you said that experience ignited a passion in you for wanting to support healthcare workers. How did that challenge reshape your perspective on life, success, and purpose?
So, I would say my dad also works for our local regional hospital. And growing up, I was I wanted to be a healthcare worker for the longest time. I was a pharmacy technician as well. So you get to meet a lot of people and realize that it's incredibly important care that people need to receive. So any way that we can help out our local hospitals or our local clinics, that's something that I've been really passionate about doing, because hopefully nobody ever has to experience one of those things, but likely you or someone else in your family is going to have to go through something like that in their lifetime. So being able to help give them more resources and help as many people as possible is something that I'm incredibly passionate about. But I would just say, just applying that to your daily life, just being kind to everyone and giving back when you can. I would say that's something that that service has helped teach me as well.
What would you say to other student athletes facing a major setback, physically, mentally, or emotionally?
I would say just to know that you're not alone. There's a ton of people around you that are going through similar things or have gone through these setbacks. And a lot of schools provide great resources, especially in Conference USA. That's something we focus on at Conference SAC, to help student athletes that are going through these challenges. I would just say to remember that it is temporary and eventually you will come out on top. And just to enjoy the moment. This is such a short period of time in our lives and we're getting to live out our dreams. So just lean on the people around you. Know that we, like me personally at MTSU and within the conference, I'm here for you. There's a lot of athletes that are also there to support you as well. So just stay strong and lean on those around you.
When young women look at your journey, athlete, engineer, a servant leader, what do you hope they see and believe about themselves?
Just that you can do anything that you set your mind to. I think with determination and hard work, you can achieve so many things in your life. And if I've been very lucky that I've had a great support system, and just, again, leaning on those people around you that want the best for you, surrounding yourself with people with similar goals, that's something that I've been very lucky to do amongst my teams and amongst my athletic department. Just with hard work and determination, you can do anything.
I would love to know what's next for Abby Lee, and whether that's on the course, in the classroom, or just life in general.
So right now I'm working towards getting a job in automation and robotics engineering. So that's always been a lifelong goal of mine. I've always been great at math and making things more efficient. So hopefully within the next year, I will become an engineer. Right now, I'm currently working for a concert rigging company as an engineer for them part time. I'll be looking for a full time job in June. And still continuing to play golf. I love the sport. It's still my dream. So, I'm very excited to start this new chapter of my life.
I have no doubt that immediately after you graduate, you'll have a full-time job. Okay, my last and final question for you. If you could sum up your mission in one sentence, the purpose that guides you every day, what would it be?
Just to make people feel loved. Just to understand, like, life brings you around so many interesting people and situations, and just to make the most out of every experience that I get to be a part of. Just uplifting those around me and making everyone feel positively about their experiences.
Oh my gosh, Abby, thank you so much for joining us today. I know fall season is winding down a little bit, and then you'll be continuing in the spring. So just good luck in this next season ahead.
Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all for having me.
Thank you so much to Jessica and Abby for taking their time to be here on the show. Now we're going to move right into our Week 10 football previews, Josh. We're going to talk some women's soccer and some cross country and some volleyball here at the end of the show. So if you're here for that, stick around. But first things first, let's talk about Week 10
football, last week of weekday CUSA. We technically have 4 weekday CUSA games, and then we have 2 Saturday games this week. So you get CUSA football all week long, y'all. Be sure to make sure you go to our schedule page, check it all out on our website if you get confused. But we're going to run through those games here starting right now. So Tuesday, October 28th, UTEP at Kennesaw State. That game is on ESPNU at 7 p.m. The Owls are at home again. So that's been quite the advantage for them this year. And, you know, UTEP, though, they're coming off of a conference victory. Maybe they could get it done. It wouldn't be the wildest thing that's ever happened in Conference USA. What are you thinking?
This is true. I mean, everything's out the window in weekdays USA. But, I obviously really like Kennesaw on this one. In the confines of home, they've been unstoppable this year. They've got 5 straight wins at home, 5 straight wins just on the season overall. So they're playing just incredible football right now. You got bowl eligibility on the line. I'm sure that's probably in their minds, right? Mm-hmm. Just an extra little thing like, hey, first year, like, we're here to make a statement, and they certainly can by being bowl eligible.
And they've done a great job there in Kennesaw, getting the stadium filled on Tuesday and Wednesday nights there in Fifth Third Stadium. Yeah. So expecting a big crowd, especially with that bowl eligibility on the line, like what you were talking about. But I just hope that they can continue to find this rhythm. Will we see both quarterbacks? Will we not? Who knows there on that one? I'm just interested to see how it goes.
Yeah, right. And they go up against a UTEP defense that, you know, is one of the top teams in CUSA in passing yards allowed. And one stat that, courtesy of our amazing stats perform partner.
Thanks, guys.
Kennesaw State is one of 2 FBS teams this season to have the fewest sacks allowed and fewest giveaways within its conference. Only Cincinnati is the other team that matches that criteria. The turnover piece is less a part of UTEP's defensive game, but one of the things that they rank very high in, 24th in FBS in sacks per game. So a big test for this offensive line, if they can, hold their ground against this UTEP defensive front. Like you said, I think you put it perfectly. Like, can they continue to find rhythm? Can Jerry continue to kind of put together the right game plan between Amari Odom and Dexter Williams to get the big plays that they're so used to having?
Yeah.
And be able to come up with a big win. UTEP comes in with a little bit of edge. Big win against Sam Houston their last time out. Skylar Locklear had 4 total touchdowns in that one. So, we talked about that one and just saying, like, hey, they need to find one quarterback and lean into him. I think their best chance of trying to stack a win is by really, just giving him the keys and saying, all right, here you go.
Drive the car.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, Kennesaw State, though, we've talked about it early in the season that the turnover bug had really bitten them and they were having some tough games with that. It's been a lot better the last 2 games with them, too. So if they can keep the ball in their hands and not in the opponent's hands, I think that they'll be doing pretty well in this one. I'll make a prediction. I think Kennesaw State makes it to bowl eligibility. And for them, nothing against UTEP. I hope that they do, because that is such a great storyline. Yeah. So awesome. It would be so great to congratulate those guys on doing that in their first year of eligibility to go to a bowl game. So,
The other thing with them, too, and again, not that I think, Kennesaw is in the contention for a playoff spot right now, but it's worth noting that you look at their resume, their 2 losses are a 1-point loss to Wake Forest,
1-point loss,
who is now 5-2 or 6-2, and they just beat SMU. So they're obviously a really good ACC team, and they lost to Indiana, who's the number 2 team in the country.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of teams would have lost in the same fashion that they lost to Indiana,
who has run up the score on a lot of teams this year, not just group of 5, 6, whatever it is now these days. Not just those teams. Yeah. They've run up the score on a lot of teams that they've played this year. So I'm an Indiana alum also. So I can sit here and talk about that all day, but we'll save that for another time. All right. That's our lone game on Tuesday night. So you better be tuned into that one. So we've got 2, though, on the slate on Wednesday, starting off with Jack State at Middle Tennessee, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ESPN2. Jack State still sitting at 3-0 in conference play. So let's see how they can do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the pressure's on here as they go, down the stretch of the season, trying to get back to the CUSA championship, trying to see if they can run it back to back. We've seen it happen, a few times here in the last, 5-10 years. I think the key for them is just going to be leaning into this run game, right? And it just continues week after week. You look at another great note I got this week. Jacksonville State's rushed for at least 200 yards and multiple touchdowns in 6 straight games.
All right.
This is the second longest streak by an FBS team this season, behind Air Force. Of course, it had to be a service academy. And their SID, Donnie, jokes all the time. He's like, oh, maybe one of these games we won't play like a service academy. Well, when it wins you ball games and gets you stats like that, you probably should.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be continue to be a point of emphasis for them. Between Caden Creel, Cam Cook in that backfield. I mean, what they're doing on the ground is insane. But I will say Middle Tennessee comes in with the league's second best rushing defense.
And I won't lie to you. I was really surprised by that. You look at the games that Middle Tennessee has put together as a whole defensively, and that was a surprise to me. But numbers don't lie; they've got they're number two in the conference. So I'm see how that one turns out. I'm not going to go over the tackles for loss allowed stat because it always confuses me. So if you want to go over that one, you can. But
if it's a low number, it's good. If it's a high number, it's bad. But yeah, Middle Tennessee, they have really applied the pressure very well. Demonte Smith at that nose tackle position for them this year has been just really fun to watch. I mean, he's an animal on the field. But you take away their Kennesaw game, where Kennesaw had pitched a clean sheet in that game. They didn't get a single tackle for loss or sack, which was very rare for them. Every other game, it's been like 7, 8, 9 tackles for loss. So that one's kind of an outlier, but they're still 44th in the nation in tackles for loss. Jack State, known for offensive line, right? We talked about Coach Trickett, their offensive line coach. He's been there for years. He's cranked out a ton of guys like the Clay Webbs of the world.
Yeah.
That has been one thing they have struggled with this year. They don't give up too many sacks. They're good at, pass protection and protecting the quarterback there. But, getting met at the line there has been something they struggle with. So that could play into, whether Middle Tennessee is able to stop this run game.
All right. I don't know if they will be able to. Jacksonville State's run game has been quite solid this year, for sure. So we'll have to see how that one turns out, though. I hate making predictions in these games because you really just never know.
Yeah.
But I do think that Jacksonville State squeaks this one out. But, Middle Tennessee, close game against Delaware this week. Not going to say it's going to be a blowout, but I do think that the Gamecocks will win this one. Another Wednesday night game, FIU at Missouri State. That game's at 7 o'clock on CBS Sports Network. So, what are you thinking on this one?
I'll be there for this one.
Hey, all right. Yeah. Going to Springfield.
Yeah, excited to get out to Springfield, check out Plaster Stadium.
What else are you going to check out while you're in Springfield?
Cashew Chicken. I did a little bit of research on where I'm going to go once I get into town. So if there are any Missouri State fans listening that want to give me some recommendations or, whatever, I'm open.
And if you missed our football preview episode from Missouri State back when we did them over the summer, apparently Springfield, Missouri is the home, the birthplace.
It is the cashew chicken capital. It is branded everywhere.
Place of cashew chicken. So there's your fun fact of the day. But lots of good stuff in this one. First stat that you put here for us is time of possession battle. Number one is FIU. Number two is Missouri State in conference. So definitely going to be a battle there for who can win that time of possession in this game.
Yeah, and I think both of these offenses, obviously have their specialties. And so I think whoever is able to build some drives, whoever is able to eat some clock, and really hold on to the ball as long as they can is going to come out on top of this one. I think this is definitely one of the more intriguing games of the week, just because Missouri State, sitting at 4-3, potential bowl eligibility. Mm-hmm. Obviously they need some help, but if they can get to 6 wins, kind of do their part of it, maybe they're able to get there. FIU 3-4, they're kind of on the other side, the season is very close to slipping away from us. And I looked ahead at their schedule just to kind of think, all right, is this a must-win game? And it's definitely one of the 50-50 games. You get they do play Middle Tennessee and Sam Houston later in the year, but they get Jack State and Liberty at home. So there's a few other games in there that I'm like, they could win, but this feels like if you win this one, you feel pretty good about picking up a couple wins later in the schedule to get to 6 wins. So a little of added pressure for FIU, but yeah, I mean, we know what Keyshawn Owens and this rushing offense is capable of. They've rushed for 235 yards per game in their last 2 games. Missouri State has kind of had a weird schedule. I almost put in a stat here about how low their rushing yards allowed is, but then I looked at who they've been playing. They played Delaware, they played Middle Tennessee, they played WKU. So they played a lot of teams. They're not running the ball more than 30 times. You had to, you know, you really had to go back to when they played USC or SMU to see how they did against a team who has a primary run game. So a little, you know, skewed, but kind of adds some intrigue of just like, all right, you haven't faced a team like this. So how are you going to perform when you are met with a guy like Keyshawn Owens? Right. Because you haven't had to play a running back of that caliber in a handful of weeks.
All right. Well, that I like that. That's a little interesting tidbit.
Okay, yeah.
Thought about it that way. So that'll be a good one there. Obviously, Jacob Clark back again. And we'll have to see. Maybe he's got a little bit of the jitters out after his first week back off of an injury. Maybe he can put together a good performance there for the Bears. And like you were saying before, we still need some help to get the Bears to bowl eligibility. We need some teams across the country to lose some games. I hate wishing that on anyone, but we here at Conference USA need that to happen in order for Delaware and Missouri State both to make it to a bowl this year. So
yeah, I think we've got half. There's, I think, 82 teams that can get in to a bowl this year, including the playoff. 40 have confirmed bowl eligibility. There's still about 80 teams that are left. So
okay,
it's starting to kind of thin out a little bit of like, all right, if you can get there, you know, you might be, this year might be the year they're, we're able to get them and Delaware both.
Okay. Because
Delaware's sitting right there, you know, at 4 wins as well. We'll see.
All right. Let's hope that plays out in their favor. Okay. Moving on to our final weekday CUSA game of 2025.
Yeah.
Halloween night. It's going to be fun. It's going to be wild and wacky, I'm sure. Sam Houston headed to Ruston. 2 home games in a row for Louisiana Tech.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty nice. CBS Sports Network, 7 o'clock p.m. on Friday. All right. What are we looking at in this one?
The first thing that jumped out at me when I was doing my preview, we got Ben DiNucci on the call for this game. He's doing games for CBS this year, and I saw that name on there. I was like, oh, cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. So excited to have him get a taste of weekday CUSA, see what he thinks. But yeah, I mean, this obviously both these teams are in need of a win right now. Obviously, we've talked plenty about Sam Houston. They still need a win overall. La Tech, having lost in the way they have to Kennesaw and then WKU, you know, obviously conference leaders, they're not bad losses, but they're probably sitting there like, dang, all right, we got to get back in the win column, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, Sam Houston might find themselves on the other end of a bad game just because La Tech is a little frustrated right now and wanting to, you know, really hit someone in the mouth. But, you know, the two things that I was looking through, you know, for this game, Hunter Watson, I know Phil Longo came out a couple weeks ago, really expressed that he was proud of the confidence that he's showing. And you look at the last few games, Watson's completed 65% of his passes, 5 touchdowns, only 1 interception in the last 3 games. So it's starting to come along a little slower than I'm sure, you know, the Sam Houston and the Bearcats fans would have liked.
Sure.
But he's still playing good ball right now. We'll see if he can continue to do that. For Louisiana Tech, they just got to clean up the mistakes. Mm-hmm. Especially after that WKU game.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting taking a look at these last two Louisiana Tech games and where we were 4 weeks ago talking about this team. You know, they're still very good defensively, but they've made a lot of mistakes. And so it's one of those things that you've got to shore up to put yourself in the running for bowl eligibility, in the running for it. Listen, you look at this schedule, there's a lot of things that could happen. They're still not out for the Conference USA Championship either. So especially, you know, with the slate that they have remaining. So we'll have to see how this one ends up. I know Sam Houston is looking for their first win of the season. That's what they want. They need it. They need it bad. Can they get it done on a spooky Friday night in Ruston, Louisiana?
That'd be the perfect ending of weekday CUSA.
It certainly would. That I could not have said that better myself.
Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss.
Tie the bow on weekday CUSA. That would be something.
Yes.
I mean, for my sake, I really need Louisiana Tech to make it back to the championship game because they were them and WKU were my championship pick.
Oh man.
Luckily, I didn't say where the game was going to be, and I think with WKU's at 4-1, I feel pretty good about them, but I need Louisiana Tech to...
You know what's funny, Josh, is you made that pick when I was not here in the office, and I was like, how rude of him to come out when I was not here and make that pick. Well, joke's on you, because look at where things have ended up now. So here's my pick for the Conference USA Championship.
Okay.
Kennesaw State, Jack State.
Okay.
in Kennesaw.
In
that's
Kennesaw.
What I'm going for. They play each other November 15th. Okay. All right, well, we'll have to see. That's a huge one coming up in a couple of weeks. But there we go. Now I get to make my pick a couple of weeks late.
Maybe, I mean, what a escalation to go from, again, 2-10 to getting bowl eligibility in your first season of eligibility to hosting the conference championship game would be crazy.
It would be huge. But I mean, Jack State did the same thing pretty
much.
That's
true. Yeah.
So, and also these two were A-Sun rivalries.
I know.
Like they were A-Sun rivals back in just a couple of years ago. So I think it'd be really fun.
That would be really fun.
That's what I'm going for.
The fans would be about it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Heated.
It would be a lot of fun. And the distance between those two stadiums, between those two teams is not very far at all. So, all right. There's my prediction.
Okay. All right.
We're moving on to Saturday games. Before I talk about it for too long and put my foot in my mouth, we are moving on to Saturday. We've got two contests this week. Everyone in action this week across the board. So Delaware moves to Liberty, goes in and sees if they can get their fifth win of the season. 2:30 p.m. Central Time, CBS Sports Network. I'm excited for this game. I don't really know why.
I had the same feeling. I just looked at it and I was like, this is like a fun matchup. And I actually couldn't believe this is their first meeting.
Oh, interesting.
Surely at some point when they were both in FCS, they would have played just because the regionality. Maybe that's a mistake. When I looked at their website, they all have a history page on the series history. It didn't pop up with any meeting. Okay. So, which is also just kind of interesting. Like they each get their first taste. Obviously, Delaware's first year in CUSA. We talked plenty about Nick Minicucci earlier. His matchup here against this Liberty passing defense, not that he hasn't played some good defenses already, but Liberty ranks 17th nationally in passing yards allowed. And obviously, we know where Delaware sits. They're leading the conference, top 15 passing offense. Liberty hasn't allowed. I'll see if I know you have the notes, but before you saw this, what would you have guessed the last time that Liberty allowed a 300-yard passer?
Ooh, three. Oh, gosh. I don't know.
You would have thought that it wasn't that long ago because, like,
oh, yeah, you know, eight games this season.
Right. But the 2023 Fiesta Bowl.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean,
the
rightly so.
Yes. Okay. That's interesting. So we're thinking, though, it could happen again this weekend, potentially.
It could. I think just with the way Nick is playing, of recent, I think that maybe, he's the that'd be some pretty good company to join.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously, we just need to see some things out of Ethan Vasco this week. See if he can get back to the way he was earlier this season, I think, for that Liberty team. But I'm not sure what to expect out of this one. You get a home game in Lynchburg and, they fill that stadium very well. The fans there are great. So I'm not really sure what I'm thinking on this one. I just have this like weird excitement that this is going to be a good game.
Yeah, I think just because the branding of Liberty, right, and just because of how successful they've been in recent years, and then again because Delaware has been kind of a hot start FBS program so far, it's a fun one. We get a linear spot on Saturday, which is great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with Liberty, like, I just feel like they haven't hit it. They hit the pedal yet, and they haven't hit that gear yet of just like seeing what they're really made of this year. And I had to look back because last year, this Liberty rushing offense was unstoppable with Quentin Cooley. They had 7 games of 200 plus yards. This year, not a single one.
All right.
So that's just something that I'm like, that is part of your identity.
Yeah.
And so if you want to win some ball games and they're certainly not out of the race either right now.
I was going to say that. They're sitting at 2-1.
Yeah. So a lot of games ahead for them. And if they want to make some noise here, they got to get the run game going.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be key for them.
For sure. It's down to be a fun November, everyone. So, yeah. All right. Our final game, or actually this game is at the same time here on Saturday, New Mexico State at WKU. That is at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Saturday on ESPN+. So, obviously, do we think, is Maverick staying in or out? Is he coming back in? Do we know?
Tyson today in his press, we're recording this on Monday, today in his press conference did say it sounded like we should expect to see Rodney Tisdale back in at quarterback. There was still not 100% on Maverick McIver's shoulder. And I think, again, because of the way he just looked against a really good Louisiana Tech team, probably not a bad idea to give him, you know, he gets a home start from the home fans against New Mexico State team that, again, think you should win against. So that'll be a nice little confidence boost for him to get the starting nod there. And the other thing, too, just I was thinking this as you mentioned that we're turning the calendar to November.
I know.
a big thing for Coach Helton in this program, he says a lot, you know, in November they remember. I don't know if I think he says a little
something like that.
Something along those lines that these games are the ones that really are going to start to matter because you have teams that are playing for bowl eligibility. You have teams that are in the conference title race. So this is where it's really going to start to heat up. But, you know, for New Mexico State, you know, you got to get back to the efficient play that we saw the first half of the season, obviously up until this Missouri State game where it was very mistake prone. And then I think kind of on a similar note for WKU, they can't afford, you know, they got bailed out by Louisiana Tech shooting themselves a lot in the foot. They can't make the same mistakes against this New Mexico State team because they're right up there with Louisiana Tech in terms of, you know, the turnover stats and all the defensive stats. So, especially with a freshman quarterback, you got to just play clean ball, you know, give him a good game plan that's not going to, you know, force him to make any tough throws or, you know, just be put in danger of fumbling the ball, whatever it may be. And I try that, of course, Tyson Helton, Rick Bowie, the OC there, will do so.
And I mean, I look at this New Mexico State team too, and there's just been so many games that have either come down to the wire or came down to a mistake or two that have just lost them to game.
Yeah.
I still think this team is a very good team. They just need to get over the hump and get into the W column instead of the L column with some of these games. So could be a good one. Obviously, Logan Fife has huge playability. We saw it out of WKU again this week, despite not having Maverick McIver. So we'll have to see how this one plays out. But again, all 12 teams in action this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that's all I have on the football side of things.
Yeah.
Because we've got some other sports that are championships are starting this weekend.
I know.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Fall championships are upon us. We start things out with cross country. The Conference USA Cross Country Championships are this Saturday morning, November 1st. Before you turn on your football, you may have like, you know, game day on one screen, the Conference USA Cross Country Championship on the other.
People are great. First hour, you know, 30 minutes of game day, and then you can switch the good stuff's out of the way. You can, flip over to the cross country.
It's taking place in Huntsville this year, but the women's and men's races will both be live on ESPN Plus. So the women's race starts at 9 a.m. Central Time, and then the men's race starts at 10 a.m. Central Time. And again, you can catch both of those on ESPN Plus. I like this little fun fact that I didn't even see that you put that on there with the men's cross country. Middle Tennessee is currently number 5 in the South region rankings behind Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Lipscomb.
Yeah, they're in some good company right now. Obviously doing really well this season. So we'll see if that, you know, again, on race day, everything you've done up to that point is out the window. It's all about, you know, what you do that day. It's all about the conditions of the race. And, you know, having looked at the weather, I hope some of the rain that we just got has kind of moved out, you know, through there by this weekend. But and I know there's a hurricane coming up through the
in Jamaica. Hopefully that doesn't end up at making any weather delays there. But it all depends. There's lots of factors when it comes to cross country. I myself am not a cross country runner. I don't pretend to be. But this could be really exciting. I know that a lot of these teams are just raring to go and get out there.
Yep.
First Conference USA Championship this season begins and ends this Saturday, November 1st, with cross country. But then you flip the calendar over to the next day, and we have our women's soccer championship starting this Sunday, November 2nd. We finished everything out this past weekend. WKU and Liberty were crowned co-regular season champions. We talked a little bit about this on the program last week. There were a lot of things that were factors into the fact that the tie could not be broken and that they had to be co-regular season champions if everything played out that way. But WKU does earn the top seed based on points against common opponents. And so they are the number one seed, Liberty number two. We can run down the line, but we start on Sunday this year, which is a little bit different for some people.
Yeah, changed up the format a lot. We went from 6 teams in to 8 teams in. So now you're just going the traditional quarterfinal action without, you know, the top 2 teams getting byes. But we start Sunday morning, bright and early, 11 a.m. Eastern with Liberty against La Tech. Then Sam Houston, Delaware, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Top seeded WKU versus Missouri State, 4:30 p.m. Eastern. And then wrap up the first day of action, Middle Tennessee against defending champions FIU at 7 p.m. Eastern. So very interesting field. Obviously, yeah, huge kudos to WKU and Liberty for winning conference title or the regular season title. I think we kind of expected Liberty to be at that place by at this point in the year. WKU has been a huge surprise.
Yeah.
And then you get the two newcomers, Delaware and Missouri State, are in the field. And then, yeah, the defending champions FIU under their first year head coach slipped all the way down to the 5 seed. So I think there could be a lot of interesting games here. You know, as this tournament plays out, it continues with semifinals at 4 and 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, championship final at noon Eastern on Friday. Yeah. So
this is the one you need to go check the schedule out on, because we play Sunday, Tuesday, Friday, which is also different than what we've done in years
off. Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely make sure you check that out on our Conference USA website. You can view the entire bracket there as well if you want to check out the seating and where everyone stands. But all conference awards come out this upcoming Friday. We'll find out all of our Player of the Year awards and our all conference teams. But I cannot believe that we are this far through the season already. The calendar is turning to November, everyone, and things are starting to get really exciting.
Yeah.
Another November championship that's not here quite yet that saw some really exciting action over the weekend is our women's volleyball teams. We talked about it last week. UTEP and WKU were both sitting undefeated in conference play going into this weekend, playing each other. Mm-hmm. What happened, Josh?
Madness. Absolute madness. Yeah, this is a great, you know, preview of hopefully a potential third matchup that we see at the conference tournament, potentially in the conference championship game. But yeah, split the series with each side.
Siri would like to get it an order.
What does she think about? Each team swept the other in just a very interesting fashion. And I'm not a huge volleyball person, so I don't know, you know, how normal this is for these regular season back-to-back games like this. But, you know, the first one on Friday, a little closer in the set scores. And then, you know, Saturday, like WKU was just like, okay, you know, the way they responded, and I think they won like the second and third sets, like 25-18. So, I mean, they looked convincing in the second game, but
yeah. But I mean, so UTEP comes out, we talked about it going in. WKU had an incredible conference win streak going over 100 games. I think it might be
200.
200.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you look back at the dates, I think they had lost a regular season conference matchup since sometime around this exact same time, sometime in October of 2017. Which is absolutely insane.
That is crazy. And they started it by beating UTEP.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah,
okay.
I did see that on social media. And then, yeah, so it's funny enough that they finished the weekend by beating UTEP. So who knows? Maybe this is starting another
hot streak. But started
Conference USA in the next 7 years.
Yes. But, I mean, you know, UTEP went in there. I think it was a surprising score for a lot of people. WKU dropped 3 straight sets for UTEP to win the match 3-0. But then they turned around and just did it right back to UTEP, and it was a 3-0 match. I think a lot of people were expecting these to go to 3-2 for sure, all 5 sets, but it just didn't happen that way. And so really interesting stuff there from those two teams. FIU goes into Liberty, sweeps both of those matches. Kennesaw State swept both of their matches against Delaware. So there's a whole lot of really exciting stuff going on. Oh, and both of those teams only sit one game back of WKU in the conference standing. So lots of exciting stuff to go. 3 weeks remaining in the regular season for volleyball. And then we'll get into that conference championship here in just a few weeks as well.
And then we'll blink and it'll be football championship game episode,
and then we'll blink again and it'll be spring championship season. Let's hope that doesn't come as quite as quickly. But basketball here, isn't that starting in like 2 weeks?
Oh yeah,
a week.
Yeah, a week.
That's crazy. We'll have to start talking about basketball now too, I guess.
Yep.
Have Eric and Jessica come on the show and give us some updates. But guys, we appreciate you for joining us for this little bit more of a lengthy episode. We had a lot to talk about this week, but we had a lot of fun doing it, and we hope you did too. Thank you so much to listening to CUSA Insider. If you are watching us right now, you've obviously found us on YouTube. If you're listening, one of our OG audio only listeners, you can go find us on YouTube if you'd like. Just search Conference USA. And when our page comes up, the show is right there on the homepage, one of the very first tabs that you will see there on YouTube. But we are still on Apple
Apple's podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music if you would like to listen to audio only. And also be sure that you're following us on social media at CUSA Insider Pod on X and Instagram so that you never miss an update or a new episode. All right, everyone, that is it for us today. You are listening to CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Sarah Rudolph, signing off.